This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Tech, show number 150, recorded on January 9th, 2014. Here at Home Tech, we cover all your favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home. News, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the Average Tech Guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska, and we post the show with world-class show notes each week out at theAverageGuy.tv. If you have questions or comments or even contributions for the show, you can contact the show via email. Just send me an email, jim@theAverageGuy.tv. You can find me on Twitter, @JCollison, or you can now call those questions in. I'm trying this new call-in number. Nobody took me up on it last week. Nobody called in. So you guys can call in Crank if you want, just to see if you know Crank messages if you want. But try this, 402-478-8450. That's my Google Voice number. And if even Crank calls would be fine with me. Give me a call. Now everybody is going to just crank me this week. It'll be fun. And if it's a good question, we'll play it right here on the show and give you an opportunity to get your questions in. And we are also now using Chatwing for our chat provider. If you've come here for the first time in the last 2 weeks, you'll notice, hey, what's going on here? You can log in with Facebook, Twitter, Google, or Chatwing, or just be a guest. Ken out there is saying he had to work on getting his avatar. If you log in as a guest, you can't control your avatar, but if you log in with any of those other services, Facebook, Twitter, Google+, or Chatwing, you can kind of dictate what that avatar looks like. We also now have a Live 2 option, so if you go out to theAverageGuy.tv/Live2, that's a little better of a fit. We're going to talk about the Surface here a little bit later, but that's a little better fit for your Surface. For the Surface screen or even an iPad turned into portrait mode. So if you want to try that, that is on Live 2. And we also, I also have a chat, just a chat window. So if you go to theAverageGuy.tv/chat, that's just a window with just the chat if you want it. There's also a red little box that allows you to pop that out. You used to have to go to livestream.com/thepodcast, and you could pop it out from there. Now you can just pop it out right from theAverageGuy.tv/live. Look for the red box in the upper right-hand corner of chat. And, of course, all this is available out at theAverageGuy.tv. All right, excited for tonight. Back podcasting after another week, and I have Michael Crump here. Michael's a fellow Microsoft MVP, and I met Michael a couple months ago now while we were doing interviews out at the Heartland Developer Conference here in Omaha. Michael, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so very much for having me, Jim. It is an absolute pleasure to be back for the third time.
Yeah, it's good. Third, including the Heartland Developer
one. I'm including it.
Heartland Developer, then one we were talking pre-show, 139 is Michael before. So after you get done with this, if you haven't listened to 139, go back and listen to that. But Michael's a fellow geek and is all things tech and all things gadget. And the interview I did with him at Heartland Developer Conference went a little long. We actually went a little long last time as well, because we enjoy talking about the things that that are all tech related. Michael, did you follow CES very carefully? I mean, I know that's probably the most covered tech event on the planet.
I followed a lot of it through Flipboard. Believe it or not. So I was kind of jealous of some of the people that I know that actually went to CES, and I was looking through their Twitter stream, kind of seeing what they were saying and stuff like that. But I've been using Flipboard like crazy here lately, and it's just so easy to get the best of CES without having to wade through all of the just random, some of the boring stuff that I don't care anything about, like a new vacuum cleaner.
Yeah. A bendable vacuum cleaner. Right? A 4K microwave.
Exactly.
Who did you follow? So who gives you the best coverage for something like that? Who do you really like?
Well, I've actually been covering Telerik CSO, which is Stephen Forte. So Stephen, he's been tweeting, and basically most of it has been through his Instagram account.
Oh, okay.
So he'll post Instagram pictures of like the latest tech, and makes me want to be there. And
well, you probably could have gotten there. Dave McCabe, who's my host over at the homeservershow.com, he was supposed to go. this time, and they had so much snow in Indianapolis. Of course, the flights on Sunday were messed up, right? Everywhere.
It was a mess. Yeah. There was a huge mess for everybody trying to go into get into Codemash, which was in Sandusky, Ohio. They were having some issues there, and so I remember just seeing all the tweets coming through from that. So yeah, it was kind of a painful.
Yeah, it was a bad week. If you didn't get there on Saturday, you probably weren't making it into Vegas for most people. That's a lesson learned. Get into Vegas early, type thing, and make sure that goes off. Michael, for folks who don't know you, even though we had you on before, give us a little bit of background on who you are, what you do, who you work for, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am Michael Crump. I'm an MVP, and I've been an MVP for several years now. And I've been an MVP in Silverlight, even though I'm going to be soon moved to client development.
Okay, good, good.
as they are phasing the Silverlight MVP expertise away. But I work at Telerik. A lot of people are familiar with Telerik from the types of UI components that they build, and also some of the testing and CMS, and some of the other products. That Telerik is known for, like Kendo. So a lot of people may be familiar with Telerik from that area. I work primarily with everything that we build that is XAML and mobile. So I'm into pretty much all of the mobile technologies, and somebody will actually pay me for it.
That's not a bad place to be. I mentioned earlier in the show, I'm getting an opportunity to podcast now with Gallup. It's not a bad deal to get paid for what you love to do.
Exactly. And at Telerik, I mean, it's an absolutely, you're working with some of the best and smartest, people in the industry. And, every single day, it's great to be on a call with, 15, 20 guys, and every single person you're learning something from every call. So yeah, that's kind of the short of what I do. Outside of that, everything from any type of magazines, developer magazines primarily I write for, MSDN, Digital Studio Magazine, Code Magazine, Dev Pro Connections, speak at a lot of conferences. I was in Sweden for Oradev, Bulgaria for DevReach, then just all throughout the United States for just various types of conferences. And I speak primarily on mobile technologies. So that's kind of like it in a nutshell.
Is there any development being done anywhere else at this point, to be honest? I mean, nobody does Windows development anymore, so... Right?
Yeah.
If you're a developer, you got to be into mobile. I mean, we still do a lot of Java and a lot of C# at the enterprise level. And so
there's
probably still a lot of enterprise development being done. Oracle, of course, is big in that space as well. So if you want to, those Oracle developers are always, few and far between, making good money and doing
They're making really good money.
They really are. So there still is a lot of development out there in enterprise, but mobile is kind of where that's sexy. The sexy development is. I'll put this in chat. I want to spend a little bit of time talking about, you did a blog post, technologies that you're excited about for 2014. I think for this crowd that normally joins my show, they're pretty excited or pretty interested in a lot of these things. Let's just kind of roll through these. You mentioned it in the pre-show.
Sounds great.
You're pretty excited about wearables, and you got one of those for Christmas. So tell me about what you got and why you're excited about it.
Yes. So I got the Pebble smartwatch. And I did bring my gadgets with me this time. So last time I was actually looking all over the place for them. Hopefully that comes through pretty well.
Yeah, no, it's not bad.
I'm gonna actually switch over and
I can see myself in it when you hold it up to the screen.
You can see that you can change the different type of watch faces.
This is the Pebble, right?
Yeah, this is the Pebble smartwatch. And so there's the different types of watch faces that you can add, but then there's also another menu here, and this is where you can start controlling things like your music. Then there's notifications, so like your iPhone or your Android device, and even Windows Phone, there is a Windows Phone app, will use Bluetooth and send you like your latest tweets, to your emails, to SMS messages. You can even answer your phone through the watch. There's an alarm that's built in. Obviously, the backlight just kicked in as I switched to the next one. There's settings. I'm actually running the beta. And so what you see here, this is called Smartwatch Pro. And this is an app. So there's two apps that I've installed on here already. And if I go back to this Smartwatch Pro app, you'll see that it will let you do things like display the battery to finding your phone. And I'll just navigate back up.
You're doing a nice job of navigating for doing it through the camera.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I'm just figuring this out somehow. So let me try my luck again. So there is the calendar at the top. There's Twitter. There's music. There's reminders, location, HTTP requests, back to the battery and the phone. But there's a whole set of apps that you can use for this. But you know, the really some of the neat things about this this watch is that you can kind of see these are just the three buttons. And then if you flip it over, there's a USB. This right here is actually the power. Oops. This is the power. These two little silver pieces.
Yeah.
And from here, the band on the actual watch, you can take this off and put on the still band, because they just released notified everybody that there's a new Pebble watch that's coming out, and with that new watch, basically it already comes with the still wrist straps, but you can modify your existing one without having to do any of that. But right now they're allowing developers, this is the beta 2 that they're about to roll out at the end of this month, and I've been looking at programming and starting to build some of these apps that's going to be working with this. I mean, there's just all kinds of stuff you can do. You can set the silent alarms and things like that where you don't want to disturb your partner, you know. I mean, it's just kind of amazing. So when we started seeing a brand new market emerge with all of our smartphones, you know, we had all these new apps. And then the operating systems, like Windows 8, you started to have the Windows 8 or Windows RT apps. And then, you know, Mac kind of had their Mac store going on for a while. So now the wearables is going to be, or the watches, they're going to be developers building apps, and they're going to be for sale. So that's just a brand new market that's completely untapped right now at this moment. So people are going to be jumping on this like crazy, and I've already been looking at building my first app. But unfortunately, most of my ideas that I've had, people have already started implementing them, and they're already further ahead than I am. But Pebble is really great at giving the developers the very latest tools and things that they need to build for that. But there's many, many smartwatches out there.
And that was a Kickstarter program, wasn't it?
It was a Kickstarter. I actually bought this watch at Best Buy for $90 because I still do some university work where I teach C-sharp to university students at my local university. So they gave me a coupon. Anybody that, you know, is either a student or teaches and things like that, they gave them a coupon for like, it wound up being like $50 off. So this was like a $150 watch, and I don't know how much it is right now. But I was able to get it for about $90, and I thought that was like a steal. And then obviously they came out with a brand new watch, just announced just a couple of days ago, and I'm like, oh. But it doesn't matter. I can still run the same software that those guys are running, and I can change out the bands. I mean, I have you know nicer watches that I could use if I. if
that's
I really
a
need
relic.
To.
What is that? That's a relic. That tells time. Are you kidding me? That's awesome. Hey, a couple questions from the chat room. One is, any idea on the range, the Bluetooth range on that?
Yeah, it actually works pretty well. It's your typical Bluetooth range. Now, most of the time, I haven't been like further than 90% of the time, the phone is in my pocket. and the watch obviously is on my wrist. But the other times where I'm disconnected and maybe I've set my phone on the kitchen table, I could at least walk around living room and bedroom and some of the other parts of my house and still be able to get notifications. And that's not really that far. In that circumstance, it's probably about, I don't know, 15, 20 feet, something like that. So I'm not sure what the exact range is on it, but if you just kind of, probably if you just looked up like the Bluetooth range, because it uses the latest Bluetooth 3, because there's only iPhone 5 supports it, and certain models of the Android phone supports it.
And anybody
that can support it.
The back end of that? I mean, what are they using for software on there?
What's the software that's on there? Mm-hmm. I don't know what the operating system is actually called.
Okay. But it's not an Android fork or anything like that.
Not that I know of, no. No, so when you develop for this, you can use everything from JavaScript to Objective-C to C#, to Java, just pure Java. So you get all of the flavors to develop for, and people are already building apps like crazy, and it's just going to get bigger and bigger. So what people do is they normally buy the phone. They're trying to do the coolness of just having like this little 2-page instruction manual, so you get nothing with the box. So you have to figure out a lot of the stuff on your own, and I'm hoping that in later versions they don't do that. But you have to go out to the App Store, download the Pebble app. After you download the Pebble app, then you have access to the watch faces, which makes you download another app where you can change your watch face to literally, there's thousands of them available for the 1.0 release. I mean, literally a thousand different types of watch faces. I mean, you can put Batman. I had different Star Wars characters on my phone for a while until I went to 2.0, because at 2.0 there wasn't very many people that had built watch faces yet. But it's very interesting technology. I think that this is just one of the watches. There's a lot of them that's coming out. I can see myself at least buying another one or two this year. I usually try to get rid of a lot of my junk off of on Craigslist.
Yeah, we all do.
We
buy it and then sell it on Craigslist, right?
Yeah, closer towards when I hit about the mid December, late November, somewhere around in that area, I began to start selling stuff. So I sold like my Surface. I had multiple Surface ones. I sold off all of my Surface devices because I bought a Surface 2. So I started selling all this stuff, and my wife's like, yeah, okay, it's time to recoup some of this cost you've been on crap you've been buying. So, yeah, I will be selling my Pebble watch eventually.
So a couple more questions. Does it have a vibrate alarm?
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Does it have a mic and a speaker?
Mic and a speaker, unfortunately, it does not. So you can't, whenever there is a phone call, the only thing you can do is actually just answer the call. I mean, you hit a button to answer the call, and it answers it on your phone itself. So, you pick up your phone, and the call is already active. Or you can decline the phone call from your watch. So you just hit the top button. Right up here to accept, and this one declines.
And that'll work with any Android phone, or any.
It needs to be a more of a later type of model. Okay. At least Bluetooth 3 is the bare requirements. Anything, I would say, pretty much any device that's been released within the past year and a half or so is probably going to work.
And how is it different, or have you looked at the new Galaxy offering from a watch standpoint?
Yeah, I've looked at the Galaxy. The Galaxy is awesome. The only problem with that is that it really matches well if you have a Galaxy phone. If you have a Galaxy phone and you have the watch, I mean, it's beautiful. It has a color screen versus this one, which, has two beautiful colors. I would much prefer, the color screen. The other thing about the Galaxy is battery life. You're doing really good to get a full day of battery life. It's just like a smartphone. I'm still at the point right now, you know, I carry around, you know, four different phones most of the time. I use an iPhone and I use an Android. I use Windows Phone 8. The iPhone's probably right now one of my worst of being able to use Bluetooth and run a couple of background apps and survive for a full day. This actually survives for 7 days on a full charge, and I've tested that because they claimed that it would last 7 days. It was kind of like the Fitbit when, you know, Fitbit One came out. You know, they said that, hey, you know, you guys are going to be able to use these things for 6 or 7 days without charging. A lot of people, you know, question that. And I'm here to say, even with the Fitbit, you know, I have, this is the one, I've been able, you can see how active I've been today. That was the little flower hasn't moved very much or grown. So it is a full 7 days with that as well. So that's pretty cool. The Galaxy is nowhere near that.
Will it pair with the Bluetooth? Not pair, I guess, but when we talk about an earpiece that somebody might use, that would pair to the phone as well as the watch. So you might get a phone call. You can choose to deny it or accept it on both the phone and on the watch, and it'll automatically sync to the Bluetooth device, the earpiece.
Yeah, if it's paired, if both of them are already paired to the device, you could go ahead and hit the accept button on your watch, and your Bluetooth piece that you have that's on here would see that call has been accepted, and you could start speaking. So you really don't even have to reach into your pocket.
Yeah, very nice. No, that's a good. I like that. I think we're finally getting to a point where some of this stuff is actually usable. You know, it's been kind of cheesy up until this point with some of that stuff.
It is. And I mean, like right now, I mean, there's a ton of problems. What's so funny is that a lot of people have been like, oh, can you know, show me something cool that's been happening, you know, with this thing. And so like I have a list of Pebble apps that's on my phone here. Maybe this side you can kind of see it.
There you go.
The official Pebble app, which is this one right here. Whoops. This one right here. When I run it, crashes. Oh. So there is now. This is the beta. They sent me a beta IPA to play with, and it right now is crashing. And so far, I've not been able to get it paired back. I do know how to fix it, and that's to go in and uninstall the IPA, the iPhone application that they gave me, and then reinstall it, and then it'll repair and it'll work again. But the beta, you know, it's just like everything. It's just there's a way to go.
Sure. I'm really interested in you talking and us spending some time talking about the Surface, because you had just picked one up and you'd put in the show notes, Surface 2, is it really worth it? Tell me a little bit about your Surface journey over the last couple months.
Yeah, so I bought the Surface 1. I got the Surface 1 build when they were giving them away for free. And then I bought another Surface Pro when I was at TechEd. And then I was given a Surface that was actually in the box on our last on the last podcast. I hadn't actually taken it out. It wasn't a Surface. It was a ThinkPad Windows 8 tablet. But you know, I really didn't use the Surface that much, to be quite honest with you. I mean, I built an app. I deployed it. It was in the store. I kind of felt, you know, I did what I was set out to do. I wanted to build an app. I wanted to see what the platform was like. I was talking a lot about Windows 8. I even talked about Windows 8 at HTC last year. And I'm really still interested in Windows 8. It's just, you know, there's so much technology. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, where do I pick, you know? And so I bought the Surface 2 because we had a special deal at the MVP event, and you were there. I'm pretty sure I saw your tweets.
Did you go?
Yes, I was there.
How did we miss each other?
We missed each other because I did not stay for the entire event. Okay. Uh-huh. The week before, I was actually out for like 6 or 7. I was traveling like a madman. Like I was going like way too much. I was in Sweden, and then I was at home for like Sweden, and then I was at home for like a day or two, and then I was in San Francisco for and DEF CON. And then after that, it was the MVP Summit, and like all of these things were lined up together, and I was like, okay, this is just too much. So I went to the sessions, and I met with the teams, and I got the info that I was looking for. I had went to an event prior to that that gave me some of the information I needed, so I just decided to leave early. Okay. So that's how I miss you. But yeah,
That's too bad. It would have been good to see you there.
Well, exactly. I would like to have chatted again, so in person. So with the Surface 2, so far I'm liking it. One of the things that I think most people, I don't know if they know about or may not know about, but you get 200 gigs, I believe, of data of mm-hmm. SkyDrive. Yeah. With it. So I was one of the fortunate ones that I was at Build when they gave away 100 gigs of lifetime SkyDrive. And I got that voucher, redeemed that, obviously before Telerik took it from me. It's funny is that a lot of those guys watch the show, so they'll be like, oh, you took that.
It's just 100 gig. You can buy it for $10 or something.
Yeah, it's not that bad. So, yeah, so I took that, and so you get that. So, anyway, with the Surface 2, I have been enjoying it. I loved, obviously, 8.1 is ready to go. There was a lot of pain points that I had saw from people that was upgrading, and I never experienced this. So I never upgraded my Windows, my Surface 1 to Windows 8.1. I never went through that process, and people were complaining about firmware problems. This is through Twitter, so who knows? People sure. complain about everything on Twitter. Sure. So I never went through all of that. I was just basically sold my devices after I wiped them, and then I got the Surface 2, and I've been using the Surface 2 ever since. Obviously, I got the free touch cover that all of the MVPs were given there at the event. So,
which is just horrific.
It's terrible.
It's pretty terrible. And to be honest with you, like if I switched my camera and turned it around, you would see it like, well, if I opened my closet, like tossed up in closet somewhere, because one of those things that I probably won't ever use. But overall, I do like the Surface 2 device. I think that it is another step forward. You know, there's been some leaked screenshots of some 8.2 stuff that's going to be basically the rumor is that Build this year, which occurs in April, they're going to give everybody 8.2. I mean, that's just a rumor.
Nice.
I absolutely do not know that through my sure. MVP status or anything like that. Because, you know, we're under a million NDAs.
I know. So many I can't keep track. So I try not to listen to anything. That way I can talk about anything and not feel bad about it. Now, I wonder if I can claim ignorance on my NDA. Oh, I don't know.
So, well, you know, hey, like today I tweeted Windows Phone 8. Users get the free Windows 8.1 upgrade that some big publication had found that information out. So, hey, it's a rumor. You know, I'm not sure. You know, if that's true or not. MVP didn't tell me that. So
Have you heard any rumors of what's coming in 8.2? That just on the surface. no pun intended there.
Yeah, no, not really. The screenshots were kind of more of a blur, and it was more of a, well, hey, you're getting 8.2, so you know this is something to be excited about. Obviously, you know, a lot of people are talking more and more and more about the convergence, you know, of these platforms. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, we don't know at this point. You know.
I think we can safely say, and I don't know anything either. I've been so out of the MVP channels lately. I don't know, so I'm speculating myself. But I think we're going to see it. You know, we'll see this beta release in the spring time frame. That will go live in the September-October time frame. They seem to be on a regular cadence now, which is really nice mm-hmm. with that. And so I think it'll upgrade those devices. I think we'll see Surface go to 8.2, and we'll see Surface 2 go to 8.2 for sure. And I think it will, like you said, it'll continue to bring. I think there's a lot of back end stuff. If I'm reading the tea leaves correctly, that are bringing the phone and the Surface closer together. So I think we'll see more of that integration.
And they're going to have to. They're going to have to. I mean, hands down. I mean, you know, you open up Apple, a Mac, you load Xcode, which is their IDE. There's a universal app type that will create a project that is targeted for iPhone and for the iPad, and you write the code once, and it works. Well, you have to make some changes, obviously, with the UI because of the different form factors in the iPad and the iPhone. But that universal app template is just something that you know. In order to succeed, you've got to have both. I mean, you've got to be running, you know, on the tablets, you know, and you've got to be running on the phone. And you know, Android has really already nailed that. You know, down pat, I have one app that's in the Android store. And that app was an app that I think I talked about it on the last time. You know, it's just kind of a crappy app that I made. Mm-hmm. But that app, it will actually say this app will run on 4,000 devices, and that this app isn't optimized for tablet. Here's what you need to do in your source code in order to optimize this for tablets. So everybody is already pushing towards. You write one project, or you have one solution, and inside that one solution, you know, you're developing for both phone and tablets.
Yeah, I think we got to get that. We got to get to that that point. Let's say though, for the most part, Android, while it's nailed it on both the phone and the tablets, they're not selling any tablets. I mean, no one's buying the Galaxy Tab, the Tab devices, right? I mean, Android phones have been wildly accepted and are just killing it, but the tablet hasn't. Or the iPad is really the leader. By the way, I'll say if you pull out your Surface and you go to the averageguy.tv/live2 and you turn that into portrait mode, I actually wrote that page to be optimized for the Surface. So you can get the video, you can get the chat, and the on-screen keyboard will pop up, and none of them will cover each other. So I wrote that just for the Surface 2.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I mean, that's the thing that people want. I mean, you know, the tablets are one thing. So, like, you know, one of the things that I had said in my technologies that I'm excited about was about how right now Android is just killing it with the phones, and there is so many cheap smartphones. And so I'll go into like random stores. And, like, I'll just look and see what the prepaid options are. So I go into, like, a gas station or something. I'll look at, like, their prepaid phones. They are always all really early versions of Android. And so the Moto G, I think, yep, is one of the ones that I had talked about. I just flipped over to my webpage. The Moto G was one of them that is a steal at that price. And then there's the Moto X, which is a little bit better. And then there's the bad boy of them all, which I'm actually lucky enough to own, and that's the Nexus 5. So with the Nexus 5, this has the Snapdragon processor in it, and so this is one of my latest toys. But this is just a really powerful phone, and this is the 32 gig model, and it was only $399. And the Moto G is right around the same price, but it's I'm not exactly sure why they were charging it. Why they're the same exact price. The one benefit by just buying the Nexus 5 is that it's an LG phone, and the thing is rock stable. I bought this case like for $10 or whatever off Amazon, and it's a pretty solid case. But the phone is just huge. I mean, you compare this, you know, like to the iPhone, for example.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of pales in comparison, doesn't it? You like screen real estate. Now, the $399, is that locked or unlocked? Or
unlocked. Completely, unlocked. Completely 100% unlocked. And so the reason that I bought it that way was that, of course, whenever I leave the United States, my iPhone is locked. It's locked to T-Mobile, which I'm not happy about, and obviously T-Mobile doesn't exist everywhere. Right. So I have to have a GSM phone that I can use, because when I visit another country or whatever, I will go in and I'll find a prepaid card and I'll just buy the data plan only, because I don't need the voice. I don't need, you know, text or anything like that. I'll buy the data plan only, and that will get me by in case, you know, for some reason I get lost like I usually do. can't figure out where...
It's good to have a map when you're in a foreign country. That's a good... That's a good thing to have. I actually, when I was in Germany this last spring, I got away with having I had the Lumia 920 with me, and I had no data, no service, and the map still worked. And that got me by while I was, a couple times I got really, really lost.
Yeah, well, it's easy to. I mean, you know, you get out and you start wandering or went around. I will say that a couple of years ago, I was with a colleague of mine, and we got lost in Bulgaria. And that was kind of a scary kind of feeling, because this was, I'm really thinking that this was 2011 when this happened. And we didn't have, I don't know what phones we were carrying at that point, but they weren't very good ones. Because we were literally walking around, we neither one of us had data plans. So obviously, you can tell I learned my lesson after that, to make sure that I have some way to get access to the internet wherever I'm at. But we got lost in Bulgaria. Eventually, we found a spot, and he was able to Skype and get the text and tell the person, "Hey, we're completely lost right now." Yeah. You know, we're complete idiots.
Well, in Bulgaria, right? I think it's one of those Eastern European nations that they don't even use their alphabet is completely different.
Yeah, we're two stupid Americans that have wandered around, and now we're completely lost. And you know, it's a weird, you know, because like in the U.S. you know, I get lost, and because, you know, I travel around, you know, so, you know, you get out, you know, you go visit, you know, you just see things and whatnot. Well, I always have the GPS, and I'm always in my safe comfort zone here. Like, I mean, it doesn't matter where I go. I can always find my way back to the hotel. But when I walk outside of these walls, or I cross that Atlantic Ocean, then it's all bets off. It's go find a prepaid SIM card, and I need a phone that supports that.
So, what do you use in Europe when you're over there? What do you have a certain provider? We used O2, but
I use absolutely whatever is in
the kiosk at the airport.
Whatever is there, and you know, I don't mind paying premiums. Yeah. At this point, even exchange rates, I've learned. I may have also made stupid mistakes of not getting my money changed in time when I visited, you know, a foreign country. So now I will pay the exchange rates gladly. That way, I have some sort of money on me, don't get any weird, awkward situations where a taxi driver is about to punch me.
Yeah, or take you on a ride that you'll never come back from. Let's talk about unlocked phones real quick. Do you think 2014 is a year that we break through, at least here in the United States, this idea of locked phones, and we get more unlocked options?
I would love to say that, but the carriers are just, I know that right now there's a lot of this with T-Mobile. T-Mobile's trying this. Well, we're going to pay your termination fees. This is kind of one of their latest kind of deals type of things, you know, to get you like out of contract and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, the locking of phones in the United States, there's just a lot of money to be made. I mean, even the iPhone 5C, which is another phone that I talked about, I was actually going to buy that unlocked. And it was $549. And I knew that everybody originally thought that the iPhone 5C was just, the C stood for cheap. Obviously, it doesn't. It means for color. Yeah. But, you know, I looked at the iPhone 5. I wanted it unlocked. $549. And then, obviously, my next choice, you know, for that is the Nexus 5 is just a much more powerful device. I mean, you know, in terms of the screen, I mean, the screen's 1080p. You know, it's just a beautiful device, and I can get, you know, a lot for my money for $400. And actually, the Moto G would have been another option, you know, for that as well. The only option, you know, when you stay on these One phones or Windows Phone or whatever, is really, you know, if you're stuck with like a certain app that you just can't get. And now we're seeing finally, you know, Instagram, you know, hit Windows Phone 8. I had a friend that had a Windows Phone 7 device still, and they were looking for Instagram, and it was only for Windows Phone 8. And I was like, that's kind of that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Even at Telerik, when we were building some of our Windows Phone controls, there was one of the controls that was using it was for image manipulation, and we wanted to make sure that we didn't leave Windows Phone 7 users in the dust as well, because, you know, I still make money off of Windows Phone 7 apps that I've never even updated to Windows 8.
Wow. So I was going to say, there's like seven Windows Phone 7 users out there.
Yeah.
There can't be that many left at this point.
You know, AdDuplex is a site that they do banners and ads of that nature, and they usually will report their numbers of what they're seeing from phones. And Windows Phone 8 had 75% or 80% on one of the graphs that I looked at, and I was surprised about that. So there was somewhere around 15% to 20% that was still using Windows Phone 7, but that was just people that was using apps that used AdDuplex. So that wasn't the whole market. So if we looked at the whole market, you would probably see, you know, even less Windows Phone 7 devices.
Not a ton. Not very engaged. Very engaged, you know, the Windows Phone. This is like the old days when the Mac users were very engaged, and the Windows were like, meh, you know, and now you have your Android guys are like, meh, and your Windows Phone people are like, gotta have a Windows Phone, and I've got one. I've got the 520. You know, I bought the unlocked 520. And
yes, I asked you several questions about it.
Yeah.
The 520 is the one I mentioned. Yes, I did. And I put the price down for $145.
Oh, that's way too expensive.
Yeah, I said, or cheaper with the AT&T.
You can during Christmas time. We found that thing
$90.
$49.
$49
during Christmas. Yeah.
But was that with like a coupon or something like that?
Oh no, I think it. Well, no, it was online, and it was at the actually, I think it was the Microsoft store. Was
the Microsoft store
for $49 on one of their doorbuster
deal of the day type of things.
Yeah, you had to be in person and those kinds of things, but. Even that being said, I went to a local Radio Shack just down the street here, and I found it for $69 with a cover and I think an 8 gig or whatever SD.
See, that's incredible, and I mean that really is incredible. I'll tell you, you know, picking like out of all of the different types of devices, the Windows Phone 8, especially if you're going to be able to put 8.1 on it. $60 or $70 or even $80, I would be more than willing to pay that, especially if that phone is unlocked. And my problem is that I have multiple SIM cards because I have multiple phone numbers, and no, it's not because I'm
a drug dealer.
Drug dealer. I'm thinking of Breaking Bad here. If you've watched the Breaking Bad show, man, the dudes had SIM cards and phones, and they were like cracking them like crazy. But I have them for different testing because, like, the iPhone 5 uses the Nano SIM, which I hate. I hate the Nano SIM. I wish that thing had never been created.
Well, you can't get a hold of it, right?
Yeah,
when you're trying to, it sticks in there. Once it's like when you put it in, it's permanently in. You're like, you got to get some kind of weird thing to pull it out.
When I originally went, I had to trade in my mini SIM for the Nano, and the guy gives it to me. I'm like, what am I even supposed to do with this? And obviously, there's no other phones care, because the Nexus 5, the latest and greatest Android device, doesn't use it. Moto G doesn't use it. Windows Phone 8 doesn't use it. And then our last time on the show, I showed the Firefox phone, and it didn't use it. So
how long did you hold on to that for, by the way? I forgot about the Firefox phone.
Oh, I've still got it.
Do you?
Yeah, I've got it. It's in the background. Nice. If I lean over one of these ways, you'll see the box.
There it is, the most untalked about phone of all time, the Firefox phone.
You know, it really should get a little bit of love. So there is a Pluralsight course. I didn't create it, I'm just telling you this. There is a Pluralsight course that's out there that's on how to develop apps for it, and really, it's not that bad. It's just HTML, JavaScript, and CSS3. So it's pretty easy for people to get up and started developing and building apps for it. Just right now, I have used the phone. I haven't used it to the point to where I put my SIM card in it and used it as a primary device. But I have carried it around with me and used either some sort of tethering or free Wi-Fi or
it's
whatever.
It's so far off the radar at this point, right? Nobody is talking about the Firefox phone.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when I was at Oradev, that conference had one of the chief evangelists from Mozilla that was there, and he was talking, about it. Obviously, it's one of those phones. It's just going to take a little while to get there. I mean, that's just kind of just the bottom line. I mean, we're seeing right now. We've got all of these various, phones. BlackBerry is trying, its final kind of push, for the enterprise.
They're done.
One thing that BlackBerry has going for them that nobody talks about and nobody ever mentions is that if you build an Android app, it's very easy to get that app onto a BlackBerry device. And a majority of people don't do that because they don't care. And there is a very low, market share. I mean, I know it's not on, my personal radar. BlackBerry isn't. I don't own a phone at this point that uses it.
Nobody does.
Yes, but it's real easy to port your app. That is one benefit to it if you want to get that 0.0111.
Yeah. Hey, let's transition a little bit. I don't want to run out of time, and I got some other things I want to talk to you about. One of the things, speaking of off the radar, and it's one of these weird topics that it shows up and then it kind of goes away, and it shows up and it goes away, and it made a big splash at CES, and that's 3D printing. And, the early 3D printers that were out there were super expensive, and they were kind of quirky, and they weren't very good, and it seems like they've been getting better and better over the last couple years, and I know coming down in price, a little advertisement, I'm actually going to do a local podcast here at one of our high schools. They have a 3D printer, and one of the kids is going to come on the show and talk about how they're using it in high schools, and I think that's really kind of a cool average guy topic, but what are you seeing out there? I mean, I know that even at the CES 2014, all the awards were 3D printed this year. What are you seeing in the realm of 3D? That was one of the things that showed up on your list.
Yep, it is. It's one of the things that showed up on my list. It's so funny is that that list that I had posted, I can't tell you how many views because I don't monitor Google Analytics like I do. But DZone asked if they could republish it and put all of my info on it, and they published it, and I checked it today, and it had a little over 7,000 views already. Congrats. And even one of the companies, DocuSign, which has 40,000 followers, tweeted me today thanking me for adding them to the list. And I'm like, it was just a random list. I was literally just sitting down, put the kids to bed, and here's 13 things that I'm just thinking about. Yeah. But the 3D printers, this is the year. This is the year for 3D printing. And the only reason that I'm saying that is that I believe that affordability is something that we're all looking at. And now that we're coming down to the $300, $400 range, obviously they're the smaller versions, so you're not going to be able to print like a giraffe or a full-size giraffe, but you will be able to do things like print some figures, you know, to, you know, just other random things for around the $400 price range, especially like cases and stuff. You know, I saw there was a Nexus. This is a Nexus 5 case that was $10 on Amazon, and I found that you could get a 3D printed version of the same case. It didn't have this. This is actually plastic, but it has a sticker that I put on the back of it, just of like New York City. But there's 3D printer files that's available for people that already has those devices where you don't even have to go to the store. Somebody was able to go ahead and distribute those for free. And there's a lot of there's sites that are now popping up for free 3D, you know, printables. Right now I think a lot of people are trying to figure out the legal aspects of all of this stuff. So, you know, they're getting that down pat, and you know, what are we going to do here? You know, that sort of thing.
Well, but, it's just like when cassette tapes came out, you know, when DVDs came out, when all these kinds of media, we struggle with this with music and in digital music. Like, it's okay, what are we going to do now that you can easily reproduce some of these things that were once sold? You know, it's going to have to be handled. We're going to figure that out.
I mean, the thing is that, you know, the times are absolutely changing, and, you know, it goes back, you know, from, you know, even my early days or whatever, you know, whenever you ordered something before Amazon Prime came around, you know, I remember, you know, getting a catalog in the mail. I have to show my southern nature here, a Bass Pro Shops catalog, and I may want to order something from Bass Pro Shops. I would literally tear out a form, write my name and address, put a check in the items that I wanted, and then I would use a, you know, envelope and mail it, and then they would get it, and then the item would eventually come back to me. And then, you know, we moved from that to, you know, people starting to use, like, you know, more of the phones and faxes, where you didn't have to wait for, you know, an order to come through, and then BBSs, and then obviously now with the computer, you know, with Amazon, and, you know, Amazon really nailed it with the two-day Prime shipping, and they're really going to nail it next year with the Air Drone. Or this year, if they're able to get it out with their drones.
Do you really think that's a viable? I mean, it sounds cool, right?
It sounds awesome.
There's so many problems. I mean, okay, you're from the South, right? They were asking you earlier where that accent is from. So where'd you find that accent?
Birmingham, Alabama.
All right, I think I'm pretty sure they got that.
We lost the BCS National Championship.
Yeah, you did. I'm sorry about that.
I had to cry. Well, sorry, you know, I didn't go to Auburn, so I went to UAB, which is the University of Alabama, but it's not the Tuscaloosa one. That is the one that's, well, they were going to be
right
playing
the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, they are the Crimson Tide. I went to the other one, so I always called myself, I'll go to the other Alabama.
the other one. Well, with these printers, I just lost my train of thought.
3D printing drones is what you're talking
about. Drones is where we were headed. Yes. I just can't see drones being, and you have that on your list. I just can't see this being a year where drones. I'm super skeptical. I just don't think it's scalable.
I'm going to tell you. So, like, we're seeing all of these crazy changes in, like, flights. So, next week, at the end of the week, heading down to Atlanta to pick up my global entry, where I can, you know, enter and exit, you know, the country easier, also get TSA pre-check, you know, where I can cut through some lines without always having to have this crazy amount of status on Delta, you know, because, you know, Delta awards you, you know, if you have status and things like that. There's these Delta preferred lines and things. So we're seeing a lot of changes in, you know, aviation, especially when it comes to, you know, now you can, you know, on Delta flights and other flights, United is doing it right now as well. You can have your cell phones on, and then there's been other talks about, you know, keeping them on even longer than that. But, you know, the airspace is something that, that people have always been fighting over. And the reason that I'm really pumped about, like, these drones is that this will be an absolute game changer.
Yeah, and it's just too easy to shoot those things down.
I see people wanting to shoot them down. Well, so, you know, they're not able to enter, you know, a certain number. I can't remember how many feet, how high they can go, but without invading the space
they're monitoring.
But I could see it really being something awesome. You know, Amazon would be tracking those things as they're flying out. I can see, you know, big places like San Francisco. Giving this a shot, you know, seeing how this works there, anywhere.
I think that'd be even harder in San Francisco because of it. It makes sense in a rural community because you've got a great place to land. San Francisco. I mean, this new movement towards these local Amazon boxes where you can go down to the drugstore and there's an Amazon. You know, your package goes into this. It's basically a PO box. It's for the larger cities, just because it's already pretty congested, right? I would think the drones work pretty well in rural areas or suburbs. That's where I think they work the best, right? Where you have a mass amount of people, but they're spread out. Think of Dallas, right? I mean, that would be Kansas City. Would be another perfect. There's no high rises in Kansas City. That's flat for miles, and that you could do drone deliveries there. You know, pizza and boxes from Amazon.
I even put on there something that hadn't even been released, and that was Netflix. And so I've been looking at some rumors coming out of Netflix, and Netflix started the streaming thing, and the streaming thing worked absolutely well. You know, $10 a month, unlimited streaming. We're no longer going to fight you if, you know, you and your spouse, obviously when I sit down to watch Netflix, you know, I really don't want some random Grey's Anatomy or something showing up, you know, and so they let people start picking their own profiles and things like that. So I see the same sort of thing, you know, with Netflix that, you know, if they're not, they can't get away from. So when a new movie comes out, they have to right now keep it on DVD or Blu-ray format for a certain number of time before they get the rights to stream it, unless it's one of their original series. But by using drones, they would be able to, since there's so many distribution centers, they would be able to shoot those things up in the air and deliver them to you. And I don't know what the cost would be. I mean, you got to think about that, too.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It certainly adds a huge element of expense to be able to pull this off. Although, can't be that much different than a big diesel truck that drives around town all day, with a guy dropping off boxes. It can't be that much more expensive than that.
But I can see just how cool would it really be, you know, like my son, he just turned 6, and I was just thinking, you know, right now, like an iPad and like touch interfaces and stuff like that is just absolutely natural to him. And, you know, he totally doesn't get, you know, any of the other types of input methods. I mean, you know, it's just touch. I mean, that's what he's used to. And, you know, I can see, especially in his lifetime and, you know, in those to come, you know, we're America and everybody else is kind of the same way, even though they don't admit it. We're in this instant gratification of things. And so getting our packages, whoever can win that war of getting that stuff delivered to us, so we place an order and 30 minutes later it shows up on our doorstep, is going to be very, very wealthy.
Yeah. Well, to come full circle, I actually feel like the process of this is not going to happen through drones. It's going to happen through 3D printing. So I think
that would be so sweet.
You order your thing from Amazon and it says, "Hey, this item is eligible for printing," right?
And so You get the 3D file.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about we talk about the copying aspect of it, right? So what happens now? So how do they get around it? Well, you paid 99 cents to get music, right, when everybody was copying it before. And for the most part, everybody's okay with that now.
People are fine with paying 99 cents.
Yeah, so imagine if you don't have to ship that thing anymore and you can have it made on premise. Imagine how much cheaper that would be if you're using your own materials, right? Because you got to buy the materials for that 3D printer. And so you would say, okay, I'm going to buy it on Amazon. It's 40% less if I print it myself. And when I buy it, I buy the digital rights to print that item on my printer, and then it prints. That's what I think will happen before we get drones.
It would be that would be absolutely cool, but that would obviously require everybody to have one in their homes. And it took a long time, in the past for everybody just to get internet connections. And America, you know, obviously hasn't hit the 100% mark, nowhere near it.
Look how fast we got cell phones.
Right? Yeah.
Look how fast we went to smartphones.
Yeah.
The adoption, especially if people realize they could save money, right? Again, not everybody's going to get it. It's going to be very limited at first, but imagine if you could save money doing this. I saw the article on CES. They're talking about printing a house using a 3D printer, right?
Yeah, that's
a little far-fetched, right? I get it.
Yeah, and when you think of that, you're thinking like, oh my goodness, like really? Like, so this is like Legos.
Exactly. Well, the materials matter. I mean, this is the key thing is when I was at the MVP conference, they were talking about, as in one of the sessions where they're talking about those really crappy keyboards that they made for the Surface. And they said, what we learned is that we needed more touch sensors, actually on the keyboard. And so they're actually, those are printed, right? The circuits on those keyboards are printed on there. And so the material is what matters in there. They have this highly conductive paint that they use when they paint it on there. Imagine what will happen when we get the availability to more and more materials that can be printed or put together, right? Oh. And then you could start, especially some of the plastic stuff that we use, right? That's a huge candidate for 3D printing right now, right? Anything plastic for the most part, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And so, the other thing, with it we were seeing at CES was talking about 3D, was really the death of 3D televisions or 3D glasses to use with those televisions. So there's, I think Vizio was the first one that has pulled the plug on 3D TVs. So they're not going to be investing in 3D technology for televisions.
It's silly. If you go back, for 2 years we've been talking about 3D TV and been like, why?
So my dad bought one, and my dad he's into the same sort of thing. Some of the same sort of things that I'm into. Obviously not all, but so he bought one of those televisions, and I watched a movie or two that had the 3D, and I had the glasses on and stuff. And there's only like so many items that they can throw at you on the screen before it's like, really, you're gonna throw another like axe at me?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, come on, and then like, Shrek and some of the other movies or whatever, they're throwing random apples and just stuff. It's like
just stuff to take advantage of the 3D.
They just want to do something to take advantage of it. They're like, I don't know really what to do with this technology, but
I don't like it. We saw the first Hobbit movie in 3D and I didn't like it. And I had to go back and watch it again in 2D. And then this time, when the new movie came out, I said to my wife, "We're not watching that in 3D."
I made the mistake. I was actually with some friends, and we watched Prometheus for the very first time with 3D, and I couldn't stand it. And so I had to wait at that point because this was in an IMAX 3D. Theater. I had to wait until it came out on Blu-ray in order to watch the movie the way that I wanted to watch it. So I already knew the story. I knew how it ended. I knew everything about it. And I'm a huge Ridley Scott fan. My son is named Ridley, just to tell you how big of a fan I am of Ridley Scott. And that he is named after the director. I convinced my wife to name good to go with Ridley.
Nicely
but,
done.
But yeah, so yeah, I had to wait till the Blu-ray came out.
Hey, let's transition. We got time for kind of one more topic off your list, and
okay.
It has nothing to do with technology. So, if you're listening to the show either live or recorded, I don't want you to turn it off at this point because I think this is a very important topic. It's one I deal with as a recruiter for Gallup, and I recruit technology, you know, software developers every day. That's what I do. I've developed a high school and college internship program at Gallup that is designed to teach and train students to make their way into the job world through software development. So I'm a lot of this. You had mentioned in your article that you feel like resumes and degrees are becoming less important. And this is something I've been saying for a long time, but talk a little bit about why you think so, because I know there are still some industries like the government, the U.S. government, that still mandate that you have these kinds of things. But what did you mean by that?
Yeah, so like, okay, so the first thing is that I've said this before, and the very first response that I got that came back to me was that, oh, well, you must be saying that because you don't have a degree. And I was able to say safely, I do have a degree. I have a 4-year degree. I didn't go further than that. I graduated in computer science with a minor in electrical engineering. So it wasn't anything about me not graduating and being like, you know, angry at somebody for getting a degree and me not getting one or anything like that. It was that, so when I first got a degree, to me it was the most important thing in the world. It was like, woohoo, I've got a piece of paper. This is 4 years of really hard work. So I did learn a lot of the basics. I learned a lot of things that I can apply today. I mean, there's some things that just don't go away, like, you know, in software development. But I look back over the courses that I took, and you won't believe this, but I spent I had went to a community college first, and then I went to UAB. I had spent actually 2 semesters. This was back when they were, you know, doing semesters. More primarily learning COBOL, Code of Business Oriented Language, and then I spent another 2 semesters using RPG. And while there are jobs that use that, I never, even when I the day that I graduated, I never used that, and I put that on resumes because, you know, I was thinking that may be something, you know, helpful and stuff, but I never used any of that part of it. All the things that I used was the skills that anybody that had passion for software development could pick up. I mean, there's a million great, well, not nearly a million, there's probably, you know, 6 or 7, you know, books, Gang of Four, Design Patterns. There's lots of software craftsmanship books. Java, oh my goodness. I mean, that's something, get into, grab, learn it. There's free courses. Harvard offers some of these free courses. MIT courseware is out there that's available. At Telerik, everybody that comes into our group, I interview. I'm usually one of the very first people that interviews them, and then it goes on to some of the other people. So I'm kind of like the first pick. And I never in any of my interviews that I have worked at Telerik, I have brought up, what degree do you have?
Yeah, no, it doesn't get asked a lot, I don't think. In some circles, there are others where it really does matter. I mean, I don't want to breeze over this because I've got family that does government stuff and you are going to need to have the right degree from the right school to get some of these high-level government jobs or these very technical. If you're going to work in R&D at IBM, you're going to have a PhD. You're going to have it, right? There are things where it does matter, but I think when we talk about software development, and I think to get into your point, one of the things that I look for is, what are you doing right now? Show me some things that you are doing right now, right? Show me your passions outside of work. Show me some code that you've written. Give me some things you've actually done. Because we're in software development, right? We're more worried about it. It changes faster. When we talk about all these changes in technology with watches and Wi-Fi and printers and stuff like that. But the software development world is changing just as fast, if not faster.
Yeah,
I tell students all the time, man, you got to be developing all the time.
So, you know, when I teach and when, you know, like I was saying earlier, you know, I teach some classes on C#, and C# just been a language that I fell in love with a long, long time ago. Obviously now, you know, I'm doing a lot of Objective-C as well as Java for Android development, but I really wish I had spent more time and we did have some Java classes and stuff when I was doing my CIS degree, but it still wasn't one of those things that we weren't doing anything beyond, you know, there was Hello World and tip calculators and things like that, you know, that we were doing, but there wasn't a lot of things that was beyond that. But yeah, I mean, and the resumes is like the other thing, you know, that I had mentioned. A candidate recently sent me their resume, and it was 6 or 7 pages, and there is absolutely no way I would spend time looking over 6 and 7 pages when, number one, I can go and I can look at your social media account. I can see, you know, what you're tweeting about, and if you've got a blog, which I would really hope you would, especially at Telerik, you know, everybody's got blogs. Everybody shares constantly what they're doing, what they're learning. The whole reason that I got into blogging was because my memory 6 months from now, I probably can't remember what it was that I was working on or what it was or how I fixed a certain problem. So I started blogging it really just for selfish reasons. It was because I couldn't remember crap. And it was best if I just went ahead, especially in the early Silverlight days, and that was where I really started getting noticed, was just blogging my own problems and solutions to them and just distributing that link out. And because I had team members that would come to me and they would be like, oh, Michael, how do you do this? And it was like, yeah, I'm not explaining that again. Here's my blog post. You can go read that. So my internal blog was in the corporate, you know, Wikipedia, you know, as well. So yeah, I'm at the point to where, you know, GitHub obviously isn't the end all of source control. I have a GitHub account. It's active. Is it all greens, which, you know, obviously means you're active, you know, very, you know, all the time? No, it's not. It's active enough. I don't publish as much as I would like to my public repositories, which is the ones that everybody sees. I have my private repos from our company, and you'll see more greens in that area than you'll see in my public stuff. But what I was really meaning, you know, especially like with like adding in, you know, show me your GitHub account, is just whatever cool stuff you've been working on, you know, even like, you know, like I have Codeplex projects that I had worked on. Show us some apps. We interviewed one guy. A guy that I actually referred into the company, and instead of a resume, and this isn't with me saying, you know, I don't like resumes or, you know, the degrees don't matter, and this person did not have a degree. They came in with an interview and with a resume, and their resume back at the time, this was when Silverlight was pretty hot, was actually a Silverlight application built using our controls that was a resume. Yeah. And it showed what they were able to do with our controls.
Yeah.
Needless to say, that person got the job. They're still there today. They're doing very, very well with the company. And, you know, like I said, no degree, just came in and showed something that they had built that was really, really cool and something that, you know, nobody prompted them to build. It was, you know.
Tony Rayner is making a great point out in chat. You know, this isn't, what we're talking about isn't universally accepted. Like, he's bringing up the medical industry, and that's a completely different industry, guys. And I think we're talking a lot about tech and some of those things here and kind of what we see in the trends around tech. So
If you look at my background on LinkedIn, MB Crump, you'll see that my background is all in the medical world. I worked at McKesson for 5 years. I spent 5 years at McKesson. I spent another 3 years at Children's Hospital. I've done a lot of different certifications for Eclipsis, which is now Allscripts. So in those industries, Birmingham is a very UAB, more specifically, is a hospital that celebrities come to. We have celebrities, I know Alabama, we have celebrities coming from all over to UAB for our heart doctors. These are some of the best heart doctors, also sports medicine doctors, Bo Jackson, even though he's from here, but there's been a lot of other celebrities that have come here. But if you live in this area, the medical world is what you're going to face. And when I entered these medical jobs, the degrees was all over it. And today the degrees are still all over the websites. And you know, it's one of those things that while the government and the healthcare and a lot of these other guys are going to like stay behind, and they're not just behind in, you know, they're picking their people, you know, because I'm a big remote worker advocate as well. I believe you, in order to absolutely form the best possible team, they cannot all coexist in the same exact location. You may get the one-off that everybody is completely awesome, and you may work with some really awesome team, but to get the best of the breed, I really believe that people just don't. It's impossible.
Well, even today, you know, I wasn't feeling well, and I didn't want to go in and spread it through work. And I was able to do. I didn't work all day. I took a couple naps. I'm just being honest. I was sick. In fact, I'm fading right now. But it was one of those situations where it helped to be able to work from home and have access to a lot of the stuff that I do. And to be able to get that done, I did a conference call and video conference. We worked out. Yeah, so we're doing a podcast on Monday, and I was able to get them all lined up and answer a ton of emails. And so, yeah, you've got to be able to work remotely. Michael, let me cut you off at this point because I am starting to fade, and we have gone an hour and 20, and I try and keep the recorded version of the podcast to that. Lots of great information on that
post. Oh, it's fun.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you coming out and. I've got a few things to cover before we sign off, and then we can stay around a little bit. I can cough then, and it's not so bad because it's not recorded. But, Michael, I want to thank you for coming out. That blog post, I will put it in our show notes so you can go out and take a look at that. Really some good information. Debate them on it. See if maybe you think things are a little bit different. And in your blog, let me go back to that just in case folks want to go out and grab it. It's it is just michaelcrump.net. That's the best place to go out, right?
Yeah, and one of the things is that I had and I still have a really bad problem with spammers. I've already set up filters for that, but I've had to turn it off to the point to where I have to moderate every comment now. I tried to use another filter, but it wasn't working. So well, not we'll all of them, the comments are.
We'll
showing
have them
now.
Come over to theaverageguy.tv. So if you wanna, yeah. If you got a question for Michael, come to, and this will be theaverageguy.tv/HT150. Actually, we're up to 150 shows now, and 150. And if you want to make a comment for Michael, post it there because I don't have a spam problem, and then I'll let Michael know that he's got a post over there, and he can respond to you at theaverageguy.
That would be great, and I've already had people disagree with. I think the third comment down was somebody disagreeing on the resume, the resume part. And the thing is that that's totally fine. I mean, nobody has to, you know, these are just my opinions. And the thing is that there is some cases that you know, especially CTOs and things like that. I know personally looking master's degrees and things of that nature are brought up a lot for those positions, but
they can keep them.
Yeah, exactly.
they could keep those. I'm perfectly content where I'm at. And you know, I just have, well, it's interestingly enough, my bachelor's is in humanities and Bible, right? I have a Christian liberal arts degree that I thought I was going to go work in the church here in the U.S. And I found out that technology was a lot more fun and it made more money.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the thing is that a lot of people, you know, change. I think at one point, I was doing some sort of business administration. I mean, you're young.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're young, and you're just trying to figure things out. I'm trying to even think of what I even signed up for. But no, I didn't originally go into CIS.
Yeah. Well, it just, a lot of times, that's a perfect example of when they hired me, they asked me questions about what I knew, not what I had learned, right? And I hear this from a lot of college students now. I'm like, so do you know Java? And they're like, yes, I took Java, you know, 101 and 102. It's not really what I'm asking. Do you know Java? Show me, right? Let's do something that where a class does not make you a developer.
And exactly.
We find lots of times there is a kind of a personality that makes good developers, and we're always looking for that kind of personality there. So, well, let me wrap this up real quick. Stay around for the post show. Michael, don't go far. We'll spend a little time chatting afterwards, but want to kind of bring this one in for a landing. Want to let you know, if you're a regular listener to the show, great way to listen to it, if you haven't tried it, is Stitcher. And I actually made the switch 2 weeks ago over to Stitcher full time. I'm a BeyondPod user, and so if you're on Android and you're using, I think BeyondPod's the best pod catcher that's out there. But Stitcher's not a bad alternative. If you go to Stitcher.com, you can sign up for an account, and then all these shows, and plus everything else we do, Home Server Show, Surface Geeks, Financial Tech, everything I do is available out there at Stitcher. Stitcher.com. You get on your phone and basically listen to it anywhere. Not a bad way. Check that out. If you like it, let me know. If you don't like it, let me know. I'd love to get your feedback on that. We're just trying to get people to automatically subscribe to podcasts, so give that a try, Stitcher.com. A reminder that Saturday morning, hopefully I'll be well enough, we've been doing Ask the Podcast Coach with Dave Jackson. I'm on that show over at schoolofpodcasting.com/live. About an hour's worth of talk just for the podcaster. So you can call in, send your questions in. Dave and I spend some time talking about those and answer your questions around podcasting. With about 400 or 500 podcasts under my belt, I probably know a few things, maybe, about podcasting. So come on out. schoolofpodcasting.com/live. Saturday mornings, 9:30 Central, 10:30 Eastern, and it's a live one-hour call-in show. I'd love to have you out there. And then I do want to thank you. We had a great month of December for the Average Guy Tech Scholarship Fund, and you know that's where you buy an Amazon. You use our link, theaverageguy.tv/Amazon. I take those dollars and give them back away to listeners through these scholarships, and then they do a review and they post those on there. We've had some good posts. Gordon just posted all his stuff on the Nest, and actually he has another post coming to talk about how we used it. I want to thank Gordon and Kevin for a great show last week that we did around the Nest smoke detector, and I kept calling it CO2, and it's really CO detector, so I felt pretty ignorant when I went back and listened to that podcast again, but those guys did a great job. We've got a couple more things out, and maybe you reviewing something, so let me know. Send me an email, jim@theaverageguy.tv. If you got an item, we like to keep it around $100. And if you got an item you'd like me to buy for you, ship it to you, you will use it, review it, you come on the show or write a post. And it's just good community. That's what we do. Head out to theaverageguy.tv/Amazon, and we get, you know, a little bit of credit for that. And then that goes back into the account. About $250 each month of November and December. So I appreciate you guys doing your Christmas purchases through that. I'm at like $3 this month, however. So you guys have all stopped buying at this point. And that's okay. It's January. We got to pay the bills somehow. And just don't forget to use the Average Guy link when you are out there. We are out here. If this is your first time, we're out on Home Tech every Thursday night. And actually, we're making the jump to Home Gadget Geeks here fairly quickly. I'm hoping maybe by the end of the first quarter, we'll be making the name change. A new site is coming. If you're in the inner circle of, or you followed me on Twitter for whatever reason, you know I've been posting out the a little sneak peek at what the new sites will look like. And we have those, they're about halfway done. I've got some design work that needs to be done on some of those. If you want to see a sneak peek of the site, send me a note on Twitter, at Jay Collison, and I will tweet back to you the link to it, and you can get a special sneak peek of what's going on or what's coming for both the average guy and for home gadget geeks. We do this every Thursday night, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, and we appreciate you, and I thank you, the listener, for coming out and being a part of what we do each and every week. It's a great community, and I really enjoy it. Michael, thank you again for coming out.
And, You're very welcome.
Thank you. And we'll do it all again next Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern at theaverageguy.tv live. Good night, everybody.